research he says are convincing to everyone. Ridiculous.
What are these characteristics? Some universal femininity? It is not a matter of proof, but of convincing. Is it yes? Neither religious nor anatomical, but something else.
Dr. Garavici, please, check your enthusiasm. We shall see what our patient says. The good judge will tell us, so he says, about what femininity is. I'm not sure that this has a place in science, no less psychiatry.
Since the District Court of Dresden decreed on the 13th March 1900 that I was to be placed under tutelage, I sent a note on the 24th of the same month to the directors of the asylum to contest this decision. I stated as my reasons that in any future proceedings, the director of the asylum would be asked for a further expert report about me, and that it was therefore important to acquaint him with my own opinion about the nature of my illness.
Yes, you have told us. We are listening.
From my note of 24th March 1900, the following passage is relevant. It is, of course, far from my purpose to wish to convince other people by means of a reasoned argument of the truth of my so-called delusions and hallucinations. Concerning the nerves of voluptuousness, Professor Webster was kind enough last night to grant me an interview and to lend me two books from the medical library. I now return once again to the aforementioned questions, not for the sake of my personal interest alone, but also because I consider that the transformations observable on my body may possibly lead to new scientific insights in this field.
He would like to give his body to science. For something to be made of all this, then let science be science. I gave you the books. Maybe he and she will come to their reason.
If I understood Professor Webster correctly, the science of neurology does not recognize the existence of special nerves as carriers of sensuous pleasure. He also contradicted the view that such nerves are palpable from outside, as little as nerves in general. On the other hand, she did not dispute the fact that the feeling of sensuous pleasure occurs in the female to a higher degree than in the male, involves the whole body, and that the mammae particularly play a very large part in the perception of sensuous pleasure. This fact can, in my opinion, only be explained in that some organs, whether they be called tendons or nerves or anything else, cover the whole female body more extensively than the males.
It's true. Female nipples have more nerve endings than in males. Yes, some have said that sensual pleasure is greater for a woman. But this is just a conjecture. This is not science, Dr. Garavici.
Very interesting, Paul. This reminds me of the legend of Tiresias, the mythical man who has also been a woman for a couple of years. And he was considered by many as the role model for all psychoanalysis. Indeed, the very patron saint of psychoanalysis. The experience of life as both sexes may have been inadvertent because his blindness. Tiresias was asked, who derives more pleasure from sex, women or men? And the answer was that women enjoy sex 9 times more than men, 9 times more. It was punished for this description with blindness. As compensation, he got the gift of prophecy.
This is finished.
This is never finished.
I am subjectively certain that my body, as I have repeatedly stated in consequence of divine miracles, shows these organs to such an extent that only occurs in the female body. When I exert light pressure like this with my hand on any part of my body, I can feel certain cord-like structures under the skin. These are particularly marked on my chest, where the woman's bosom is. Here, they have the peculiarity that one can feel them ending in nodular thickenings. Through pressure on such a structure, I can produce the feeling of female sensuous pleasure, particularly if I think of something feminine. I do this, by the way, not for sensual lust, but I am absolutely compelled to do so if I want to achieve sleep or protect myself against otherwise almost unbearable pain. I have to add that the female characteristics which are developing on my body show a certain periodicity at increasingly shorter intervals.
There's a sensation of immediacy, and then one of withdrawal, and this creates a kind of rhythmic feeling that you have. But you have these intense experiences, and yet you say you can wait for time, and you can wait for the future. I don't understand.
This is what a woman does. This is the experience of being a woman. It is not once and for all. It is not permanent. The reason is that everything feminine attracts God's nerves. Hence, as often as one wishes to withdraw from me, one attempts to make the female characteristics which are evident on my body recede by mirror. The effect is that the structures which I call nerves of voluptuousness are pushed a little under the surface. That is to say, not so distinctly palpable on the skin. My bosom becomes a little flatter. But when after a short time the rays have to approach again, the nerves of voluptuousness become more marked. My bosom bulges again. Such changes occur at present in as short a period as a few minutes.
What he says about identity or femininity is true, totally true. Didn't someone say that we were born for women, but become women? Voice from the future.
You're catching this madness.
The director of the asylum can hardly doubt that with these expositions, I am pursuing not only my personal interests, but also those of science. In uncovering these things, which are in my opinion connected to supernatural matters, I trust I have not laid myself open to the reproach of having touched upon issues of which, as a man, I have to be ashamed.
That upon issues of which, as a man, I have to be ashamed?
I want to add a few further remarks to the above. When the rays approached, my breasts gave the impression of a pretty well-developed female bosom. A brief glance, however, would not suffice. The observer would have to go through the trouble of spending 10 or 15 minutes near me. Anybody would notice the periodic swelling and diminution of my bosom.
Naturally, hairs remain under my arms and on my chest. These are, by the way, sparse in my case. My nipples also remain small as in the male sex. Notwithstanding, I venture to assert flatly that anybody who sees me standing in front of a mirror with the upper part of my body naked would get the undoubted impression of a female trunk, especially when the illusion is strengthened by some feminine adornments.
And why is this so important that a man's body can become a woman's? What is so great about being a woman? Have we all become completely mad here? Something needs to be added to a woman's body to make it a woman's, and how important the mirror is?
Well, something does need to be added to a woman's body to make it a woman's. And how important is the mirror?
You just repeated what I said.
You just repeated what I said.
I will not hesitate to add, of course, that once I am outside this asylum, I would grant an opportunity for observing my body to any serious specialist whose motive is scientific interest and not mere curiosity. If similar phenomena have never previously been observed on a male body, as I maintain, I believe I have thus furnished proof, which must arouse serious doubts among serious men, as to whether what has so far been attributed to hallucinations and delusions is not, after all, reality.
One more time. What is so great about being a woman? Have we all become mad? Or transgender?
The experience of years has confirmed me in this view. Indeed, I believe that God would never attempt to withdraw, which always impairs my bodily well-being considerably, but would follow my attraction without resistance permanently and uninterruptedly, if only I could always be playing the woman's part in the sexual embrace with myself, always rest my gaze on female beings, always look at female pictures. I would take this all away if only I could devote myself entirely to femininity. God would not withdraw if he knew what I was capable of, just this kind of attention.
I also wish to mention that the lower God, in fact, confirmed this when some time ago he recommended a certain mode of behavior in a number of phrases incorporated into the writing down system spoken by the rays, particularly such sentences as, voluptuousness has become God-fearing and excited. Voluptuousness is permissible for human beings if sanctified in the bonds of marriage and serves the purpose of reproduction, but in itself is never counted for much. In my relation to God, however, voluptuousness has become God-fearing. That is to say, it is the likeliest satisfactory solution for the clash of interests arising out of circumstances contrary to the order of the world.
Stop! Voluptuous feelings are just an addendum there to aid in procreation in the bonds of marriage. This is what you are saying, that you've confined these feelings to this moral code as demanded by church and state, what you call the order of the world? And now a new reverse order, the nerves become God-fearing in order to then reverse the morality, you must excite yourself, devote yourself to cultivating bodily sensation?
No, not at all.
Let me demonstrate. As soon as I allow a pause in my thinking without devoting to the cultivation of voluptuousness, nobody can either think all the time or always cultivate voluptuousness. The following unpleasant consequences mentioned earlier occur. Attacks of loathing and bodily pain. Vulgar noises from the madmen around me. And cries of help from
go slowly. Down. And up. Go on, drawing the movement. You're stronger than you think.